Hi everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Mini, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet.
I'm happy we reached the point where we don't have to introduce Ryan. We're like, yeah, this week we got Ryan, are we? It's just, you know, Ryan, we're just, you know, jump in.
Yeah, well, John was about to mouth it, but I just jumped on it, and I was like, no.
You jumped on John's mouth?
God, can we start over? We're 19 seconds in, and we've already made it. Just to show you, I don't know what
this game. No, we're going to power through. I'm not editing shit this show. All right. So this is the second mini show for the month of May. It's nice to have all the crew back together.
It's good.
The gang's all here.
Yeah, so we got a bunch of random games across multiple platforms that we're going to be talking about. Mine are all for Nintendo systems, which is appropriate for this show. So I'm representing here. Most of them are newer Nintendo games for the month. Usually we save new games for the end of the month, but I think at the end of the month we're going to have a big Mario Kart show because Mario Kart's coming out the end of the month.
Sweet.
So that seems appropriate.
Baby Park.
So there are a couple of points I needed to address before we move ahead here. First of all, most of the games I'm talking about are downloadable games, and my onboard storage on my Wii U is officially full.
Congratulations.
So it's time to get a hard drive. Yeah, I actually had to delete a couple of things to make room for the games that I'm talking about.
That's heartbreaking.
Well, I deleted Gianna Sisters, which is a game I've talked about before, and it's not great. It took up a lot of room. So
oh, there you go.
Yeah, it worked out all right. So, hard drive will probably come in the next couple of months so I can, you know, rebuy all the games. Yeah, you're covered in dog hair.
Holy
dogs,
crap,
dogs,
I just noticed
shed.
How much is on me from your
well,
dog.
It's not going to kill you.
No, it's not, but still, I'm covered in hair.
Actually, it might kill you. You might want
to. Oh, my God.
There's a couple more pieces right there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and the other thing that I wanted to address is that I found my gold Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword Wii Remote.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it has been missing since before the Wii U came out, so over a year and a half now. And I found it out in my backyard while I was mowing, which doesn't say a whole lot about me or how often I mow my yard.
Why would it go outside in the first place?
I have no idea. I mean, I do have nieces and nephews that have been here, and they have touched my stuff, and they have gone in you know, outside. But I'm not pointing any fingers, especially at the boy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was outside.
Hey, problem solved. It's back in your possession.
It is back in my possession, and it still functions, which is amazing because it has been outside in the rain.
Is it truly exposed to the elements, not like under an awning?
No, it was out in the. I almost ran over it with my lawnmower. I can't, like, I have at least mowed my lawn 3 times in the last year and a half. Mm-hmm. So I have had to have run it over at least 2 times before I finally found it.
Three times in a year and a half in Florida.
You know what?
How do you not, like, have, like, a...
Yeah, it should be a jungle.
No wonder your cat's finding snakes and mice and gophers and everything all over the place.
No, we have an alliance with the snakes. There's only one key to peace, is that that's to make an alliance and breed with their women. And in time, our differences will be forgotten. So, and I was amazed that it still functioned, because when I found it, I immediately brought it inside. Well, first I held it above my head as if I was Link opening a treasure chest. And then I brought it inside and I found there were still batteries in it. And of course, you know, I assumed those batteries were dead. So I took them out and I thought, there's no way in hell this thing is going to work. So I popped a couple new batteries in it and synced it up with my Wii U, and it works perfectly. Because it is clearly made out of Nintendium, the hardest.
Yeah, that is such durable construction.
It's ridiculous.
The hardest material known to man. Mm-hmm. So I'm very pleased that I found it. Now I have 3 Wii remotes with Wii Motion Plus built in, which is useful for Nintendo Land, and that's pretty much
moving
it.
Moving on up.
Yeah. So, who wants to start with a game? Let's jump right in.
You have a ton. Did you want to knock out a few?
I have 3. Let me knock out a quick one,
okay,
and then we'll move into yours.
Sure.
A quick one. I just barely dived into this as I turned the page of my notes. It probably sounds horrible.
I heard that too.
Yeah, wow.
I downloaded Scram Kitty and His Buddies on Rails on the Wii U eShop.
That just sounds awesome.
It sounds better than it is.
So far. We keep having these issues with Nintendo where they'll come out with a game that sounds really cool. That's how they get you.
They didn't make it. And I think this one is available
on
multiple platforms. But this one's on the Wii U eShop. It doesn't take up much space, just 100 megabytes or so, but I've only really scratched the surface of this one, and it's tough to describe So you play as this little character. It kind of looks like a little cat in a kind of a rocket ship kind of thing. And you're moving around in this arena type of level where, you know, there's boundaries on where you can go. But you can only move along glowing rails. It's kind of like you're grinding throughout the level. And sometimes you're just moving around the border of it. Sometimes there's like little obstacles to go over, like little ramps or little other rails that you can jump to. And your main goal is just to move from start to finish. And there's so far, I've played about 4 or 5 levels. There's a few enemies along the way. You can shoot them like you would in like a game like Galaga or R-Type or something like that. And they die pretty quickly. They're pretty easily dispatched. I think the hook of the game is that every level has multiple cats that you can rescue. And you rescue one just by basically moving from start to the end. But by doing different things at the levels, like killing a certain enemy or finding a way to break through a certain wall will unlock another area and you can rescue a different cat. That's kind of the hook to the game, why you're going back to it over and over again. You do have a few different skills. You know, you can shoot your enemy, and also there's like this boost jump thing which will launch you off the rails and kind of send you in an arc over to a different point in the rails. It's a little hard to control. And sometimes, like, there are these little like, coin things, and if you collect all the coins, you can rescue another cat. And
Who are you liberating these cats from?
I have no idea. I have not seen a villain. They just kind of, like, once you accomplish a certain goal, they just kind of spawn. And, like, hey, there's a cat you can rescue. Like, all right, cool. So I don't really have a whole lot of other things to say about this game. It seems all right. I'm going to put a little bit more time into it. I might not talk about it again. It's $10. I'd say wait for a sale, because so far it's not really grabbing me. But there is another game on the Wii U eShop that did grab me pretty effectively, which we'll get to later. Mm. So Ryan, why don't we jump over to you?
Okay, so I've gotten pretty obsessed with Hearthstone, which is a new Blizzard game that's been released. It's a free-to-play.
Same here. It's How pretty new? Addicting.
It came out of beta, I think, about 3 months ago.
Oh, okay.
Maybe 3 or 4 months ago.
Which I tried downloading this in beta, but for some reason, you had to, like, jump through a bunch of hoops in order to get it, which was ridiculous.
I got into it.
Did you tell them that you were press? You have a podcast?
I should have. I should just email Blizzard to be like, hey, I got a podcast. I need this ASAP. Bitches.
Yeah, it's a Nintendo podcast, but you have tens of listeners. So, I mean, we have pretty far reach. I'm sure just by talking about it now, they're going to see the Nintendo bump.
Yeah, they're going to get a little spike. Oh, but not in sales, though, because the game's free to play.
Right.
So they'll just get more people online. Yeah, and it is a just digital card game that sets you against your opponent. It's all either one-on-one, you can play against a computer, or against another like real person.
One thing that I really like about Hearthstone is it's how it's so complex, yet at the same time, it's really simplistic to play.
Oh, yeah, it is. Like, you can just walk right into it. It doesn't need too much explanation. I mean, if you want to, there is so much minutia to it if you want to get great at it. And you can churn so much time into it just playing, that at least I have. Because, God, it's gotten pretty ridiculous. And it's a game that has so much depth. Like, every single game I play, it feels like a totally different experience. And also, credit to them, because I play a lot of other, like, a lot of the other big games that I've really liked are, like, games like Dota, which, if it's a 30-minute game, that's a quick game.
Yeah.
And this one, you're usually done in about 5 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes the game's done. Yeah, like, you can have a long-winded game, 15 minutes at most.
So, I played a couple of quick games. I did a lot of losing. But I wanted to ask a couple questions about the different types of game modes. Like, I was just playing, I chose a random character, I guess, out of pre-constructed deck of cards, and I just went up against a different opponent who, you know, also had a pre-constructed deck of cards. Is there a way that you can have like a 2-on-2 match?
Not yet. There's talks that this is something that could happen down the line. I mean, because the game's still pretty fresh.
That'd be pretty cool, 2-on-2.
Mm-hmm.
You could do co-op with some friends and things like that. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, people are already like speculating on what kind of neat ways they can ramp the game up or make it different. But I think 2-on-2 is going to be the next big jump that they make.
Mm-hmm.
Finding some way to have cooperative battles.
Because you have all these character archetypes that you can pick from, and they all have different skills that make them play a little bit differently from each other.
Oh, well, I mean, just from a mechanical perspective, it is turn-based. So, like, one player takes a turn, the other one takes a turn. And it's what you can do in the game is determined by mana crystals. And you start off with one,
so that every time your turn ends and it comes back to you, you get another crystal. So you'll increase consecutively, like 1, 2, 3, 4.
And that'll max out at 10.
Yeah, and it maxes out at 10. So towards the end game, if you got a bunch of cheap cards, you could conceivably play 8, 9, 10 cards, however many you want to in one turn, depending upon how it plays out. But normally you're going to find yourself playing one or maybe sometimes no cards on a turn. And every hero, because there's 9 different heroes you can pick that all, like, as you said, fit into different kind of categories. You can either be like a warrior, for example, that's like doesn't do a lot of magic and is really obsessed about getting minions out of the field and just trying to beat your opponent down. Or you could play a mage, which is really about no minions. It's really just about keeping enough minions out there to keep the fight going, but then casting a lot of spells and trying to shut down your opponent. And every hero has a hero power, so that costs 2 crystals. And you can use that every single turn. You can't use it multiple times per turn, but you can use it every single turn if you want to.
Like the warrior, for instance, will put up a 2 armor on him, so it mm-hmm. pretty much essentially gives him 2 extra health.
Yeah.
And the mage shoots a fireball that does 1 damage to either the enemy champion or any kind of minion on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where the complexity of the game gets even bigger, is knowing the matchups, knowing who you think is good against what, and also having some preconception of what you think your opponent might try to do, even though you can construct a deck in all sorts of crazy ways. I think, God, I ramble here. Originally, you said the different kinds of ways you can play the game. And there's just play mode. Yeah, there's basically 3 modes. There's play, in which you can do casual, which is people that want to build whatever kind of decks and don't want to have anything really on the line. So you get a lot of joke decks and gimmick decks and weird stuff. Then there's ranked mode, and every month is a season for the game. And then at the end of the month, which is coming up like on the 30th, however high in the ranks you get paid out for it.
Hmm.
So the better you perform on their ladder, every month you'll get paid out again, and then you'll start over from the very beginning. So everyone goes back to the base level of level 25.
Paid out in what way?
In-game items. Either get dust to build new. By the way, that's the other thing. You can throw money into the game if you want.
Unnecessary.
But it don't have to at all. If you just play regularly, you'll get everything you want. But you'll either get gold, you get dust, which can build cards, or you get decks, which come in packs of 5 and have 1 guaranteed rare. So you open those up and then you just get 5 random cards that you can use in whatever way you want. Or there's gold, and gold can be used to buy more decks or buy into Arena, which is, I think, the most interesting way to play.
Yeah, that's very rough at times, too.
Yeah, because the way that Arena works is, because your deck, you can have 30 cards in a deck. And what you do is 30 different times, you will be given 3 cards to choose from, and you click 1. So, and that's the card you keep. So it makes it difficult to build a strategic deck, because you might get a couple of things early on, and you're like, oh, these have Wind Fury. What if I get cards later on that are going to give it charge, which would, you know, really help you out with that.
That is OP.
But then there's also a chance that that could never happen at all. Or maybe you'll get 6 cards. By the way, if you're playing in a constructed mode, you can only have 2 of a given card at any time. Or you can only include 2 in your deck at once.
Of one particular card.
Yeah, so you can't like stack up like 5 different versions of one thing. But in Arena, that can happen.
10 charge warthogs.
Yeah, God, that would be nasty. Like, and there's ways that would instantly break the game if you could do that. But in Arena, it can happen. Like, I've seen people go Druid and then get 6 Innervates. And Innervate is a card that gives you 2 mana crystals. So they're opening 4 cards will be like a 6 cost minion and then 3 Innervates. So they instantly throw out the 3 Innervates for free. And then on their very first turn, they're throwing out a game that's not intended to be played until 7 turns later. You know, like just instantly breaking that game and winning. But conversely, they also could just draw a handful of Innervates and be totally boned.
Now, when you're doing deck construction, because you can make a customizable deck.
Yep.
Do you have a pool of stuff you can choose from? How do you get more cards? Do you have to spend real money or perform well in the game in order to get more stuff?
Well, as you said before, you get gold through like winning various things or by ranking the buyout at the end or other different ways to get gold by baby and have quests that they give you and you can complete these quests. It's just like win 2 games with a warlock, get gold. You can buy it that way.
I love that they do that, by the way, because
really cool.
It discourages people from binge gaming, mm-hmm. Because you only get 3, and then once you've completed them, you only get, I think, 1 or 2 the next day. So they intentionally are making it so that you can't just sit there and you could, but it's not really beneficial for you to do it.
And so with that gold, you can buy decks and everything, but also your heroes have a level bar. So your heroes, if you're using it consistently, will level up, and when mm-hmm. you hit a certain amount of levels, you'll get cards for that particular deck, because each hero has a set amount of cards that you only can use in that hero's decks.
Yep.
So you can't use a hunter card in a mage deck.
Gotcha.
So eventually you unlock more that way. So there's a bunch of different ways that they give you cards. Mm-hmm. It just takes a little time, and you have to be a little bit more strategic in what you do.
So you can't like enter an in-game shop and be like, I want to buy that card.
No.
What you could do is just buy decks, turn them into dust, and then convert it into that card if you wanted.
Okay.
But there is a huge pay scale on that, where, like, for example, I can construct what I want out of my priest deck with a lot of the really cheap stuff, which I did. Like, I think the best card in the priest deck costs 40 dust. But I was showing him earlier, there's this badass endgame boss card that the priest has, which is just so cool, but that costs 1,600 dust. You know, it's 40 times what you're going to pay for that other card. So you got, just to get one card, that's the other thing, one card useful for one of nine characters, like, in a deck that you probably might, I mean, there's a good chance you won't even use that card. It's just so cost inefficient to throw all your money into one really expensive card. It's best just to use a lot of the, spend your money a little more wisely and then just get to, and by money in quotations, not real money.
Right.
This is just game money.
Yeah. So I don't know about you, Wes, but all this talk about deck construction takes me back to our Yu-Gi-Oh days.
Oh man, I miss them.
Which do you really?
I do. Well, not nowadays, because nowadays it's ridiculous. But it makes me... The main reason why I really like Hearthstone is because I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Online, because they had this one website to do it. But it was so complex to do it, because there's so many different cards and such different strategies.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just a headache, because... And you can even chat with the other guy, so you'll get into arguments because you accidentally do something you couldn't do before. And they didn't, like... It was such a freaking headache, but Hearthstone is an online card game where it's just really easy to play, and I mean, I just put on some music, and I just kind of unwind with Hearthstone at the end of the night.
Yeah. See, the thing with those Yu-Gi-Oh cards is I actually enjoyed collecting and constructing a deck more than I actually did playing.
Yep.
So...
You would use cards nobody in the right mind would use. Blue Wind Garbile, I'm going to take you out with this card.
And
the Swordsman and Landstar.
Come on! But see, it was so amazing when you actually win with these piece of shit cards.
See, my favorite thing I've ever seen you do, which this is just a random thing, if nobody knows how to play Yu-Gi-Oh, is when you played Jamie one time and you killed his Blue Eyes White Dragon with your Swordsman and Landstar.
Yep.
That was incredibly enjoyable. You did, like, Shield and Sword, and you had a couple of equipments... And you just boosted him up. It was really funny.
There was no reason
that should have
one card should have ever have won against him. But yeah, because I play like all these sort of like trap and buff cards, that it was always had that one chance to be like, okay, if I have the exact right cards, I can beat anybody. But just getting the combination of them was always tough.
It was one of those weird things where you'll lose 90% of the time, but that 10% you win is just completely epic. Because you'll just do the most random crap to win.
Because my, you know, quote-unquote strategy was to try to keep as many of their monsters off the field as possible. Because mine aren't strong enough to win.
No.
So that's why I loaded them up with like trap cards, like these trap holes and stuff. Just stuff that like when you play a card, I'm gonna try to get it out of there as soon as possible. And just load up with all these weaker monsters to be like, alright, it's gonna take me 5 turns to kill you this way, but as long as you don't have any monsters, I'm gonna win. Anyway, but I like using those weaker cards to win. Which is something cool about Hearthstone because it has that mana crystal system, and you can't play your more powerful cards until later in the game, there is value in having a balance between weaker cards and more powerful stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you got to ramp up. That's actually a big style of play, is to make sure that you have a lot of the early game things that you need to either just survive or just to actually start getting some pressure on your opponent. But that is going to feed into stuff that synergizes well in the late game. And, I mean, that's pretty much all of the decks I build are because I'm super obsessed with card draw. That's like my favorite mechanic of the game. And there's lots of different ways people like to play, but I'm really super into card draw. And pound for pound, my decks are terribly weak. Like if you just turn one card up at a time against your opponent, you're going to be like, your opponent's got so much better cards. But because I have so much card draw and I'm playing it so fast, it makes up for it. And there's often times like I've won games where I'm 3 draws deep into card fatigue. And my opponent still has 10 cards.
Which, that's the other thing about Hearthstone. In Yu-Gi-Oh!, when you run out of cards to draw, your next turn where you're supposed to draw a card, you lose. You're decked out. In Hearthstone, every card that you draw in the hole, so if you run out of cards and your turn starts and you're supposed to draw a card, you just lose one health.
Well,
so you can still play it.
Like, the first time you lose one health, but then after that you lose 2 health, and then 3 health. and then 4 health.
So you will quickly be pushed
out of the game.
I mean, I've done the same thing where I just have one card bent and I have cards in my deck, but I've won with just that one thing out.
But see, there in Hearthstone, there is that advantage of if your opponent doesn't have any cards to that taunt, that draw your attacks toward it, you can just attack them directly, mm-hmm. to use a Yu-Gi-Oh term, and
go for the face. Do you guys talk about going for the face?
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, do you actually have an avatar?
Not in terms
that you
of Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's the people when they talk about Hearthstone, they always talk about going for the face if you're going to actually like run them down or kill them. Fun fact.
So, anything else you want to throw out there about Hearthstone?
I talked a lot about Hearthstone. That's
I got
crazy.
2 pages of notes. I got plenty to talk about.
Well, shit.
Don't even try to segue out of this. You guys are
locked continue then.
You guys are locked in.
I will say, we'll move off of Yu-Gi-Oh! Completely after I mention this. But Wes, you mentioned that I lost a lot. Well, you have to admit, if I drew the Time Wizard, I was going to win.
Yep. No, I admit those. I said you lost about 90% of the time, but the 10% you won were epic.
Amazing wins.
They were amazing
I
wins.
I won with a Suzuki Samurai once.
Yep.
Anyway.
This is the first card game I've ever gotten into, quite frankly. Like, I've never played card games. It sounds like you guys actually have experience playing them.
Yeah, we had actual Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Like, we did that for years, which was always enjoyable. And your brother now plays Magic the Gathering.
Which one?
Jeffrey.
Oh, does he?
He has magic cards.
Huh.
I don't think he has an actual deck and has anybody to play with. Like, he got decks from somebody.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Well, I have friends that play Magic, and this is supposed to be a much more refined, simple, streamlined way of playing a card game. Where it just uses some of the basic mechanics. It doesn't have a lot of, I don't know, I guess a lot of the whatever it is that goes with it, where you have to worry about the construction of the game.
Let's get back into it.
Let's go hero by hero.
Okay.
And let's talk about how fucking great these heroes are. By the way, there are some that I just get pissed off every time I see them because I don't want to play them. But I think every hero is actually pretty well balanced.
Which I find this is one thing that I really like, because I actually do play World of Warcraft, and this game obviously is modeled after it. Which some of these heroes, they're all heroes, and all the different decks you can be are all classes in there.
You said there's 2 that haven't even been used yet, right?
Like, well, there's 2 that that they don't have heroes for, because there's 11 classes in World of Warcraft, and the 2 that aren't in a deck are Death Knight and Monk. And the Monk is relatively new, anyways, to Mist and Pandora. That's where he came out with his last expansion. So I don't know if that's because Hearthstone was in development before Mist came out. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But they haven't done anything with the Death Knight yet, so that's going to be interesting when they do.
Okay, first one to talk about, I guess, just go down the order in which they appear on the screen, Mage. And we talked about Mage a second ago. Mage is like the pure caster. Really doesn't do anything with minions. Has the cool little 1 firebolt, the 2 mana cost for 1 damage, which you can apply to a minion or you can apply to the hero's face.
Yep.
And it's really great that you can do that because also, unlike the rogue, who we'll talk about later, the rogue equips a weapon. But if you try to bring the rogue into anything on the field, it's going to take the damage from it, too.
It took me a long time to figure that out.
Yeah.
I was wondering why I was dying so quickly with the rogue first time using her.
But the mage is just perfect clean damage. The mage also has a lot of great... there's 3 different kinds of cards you can have. You basically have generic spells, minions, and then you have these things called secrets. And I think the mage has the best secrets. They're really awesome. One is just called counterspell. And all the secrets are actually really cheap. They're usually around 2 or 3 mana crystals, maybe even less. So, like, Counterspell just straight out takes whatever spell your opponent just cast and cancels it out, which can be huge. It can be so huge. Like, imagine if you're playing against a hunter that just did the Unleash the Hounds and wants to hit him with the Bloodlust, and you cancel out the Bloodlust. So instead of having, you know, 5 things doing 4 damage for 20 total, he's doing 5 damage now with 1 apiece.
Yep.
Like, perfect way to cut him down. I mean, granted, sometimes you're going to end up counterspelling something pointless. Mm-hmm. But there's that chance you could really knock them out. You could totally derail a game just with that one card. There's also Vaporize, which is great because it just straight up destroys a minion before it can even touch her. Like, just great to have. And then Mirror Entity, which is just so cool because if your opponent plays a minion, it makes its own copy of it and then puts it on your board. So if they're playing some big, nasty endgame taunt, like, say, Ironbark Protector that, say, a druid would throw out, an 8-8 with taunt, just a big pain in the ass to deal with, you get your own. So it's just a great way of just saying fuck you. And when the mage does have minions, it has a lot of things that boost spell power, so her spells get even stronger, and she has some really, really powerful spells. Like, there's her flame strike just deals 4 damage straight across the board to everything. So if you have someone that's got like a big zoo of minions out there it just wipes them clean. And that's not even counting in any spell power, because every spell power that you have that's plus whatever, it's going to increase it that much more incrementally. So if it's plus two, it'll, instead of being four, it's six. Okay, let's keep rolling through these. Hunter. And you like the Hunter, right?
I like the Hunter, because I like the beast stuff. There's a good way to boost them. I use a lot of guys who boost everybody indirectly and everything like that. His spell is you spend two and he takes two to the face.
Yeah.
You can't. The downside with that is you can't shoot any monster on the field, but he takes two to the face.
Yeah, and I think that's also why it's two damage and not one.
Exactly, because you can't control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it also, I think, more than anything, works well with beasts. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so clearly built around being the Beastmaster, which is really awesome. I think that was actually the first constructed deck I make was a Beastmaster, because I saw a lot of people using Hunters, and I was like, I really got to get on the Hunters.
Well, when I first started playing the Hunters, I we used to mop the floor with Hunters. We were like, this guy's crap. But now I figured out how he works, so he's a lot of fun.
Okay, Warrior, and Warrior is, I think, probably the most vanilla of
he's
all just, of them.
Yeah, but he's a pain in the ass at the same time, because especially if you can't get at him and he's got a nice wall, guys, he'll use his ability, which give him two armor, and eventually, five turns later, he's sitting there with 10 armor on top of 30 health. You're like, dear God, it's just, he turtles up. The Warrior is a giant turtle.
Yep. You got the Shaman. And the Shaman is the kind of, I think, the weirdest of all of the classes.
He's fun, though.
Yeah, and because his totems, you get four totally different kinds of totems that don't synergize at all.
Completely random.
So you never know what you're going to get. If you desperately need that taunt, you might get it.
Which is always enjoyable when you do get that taunt.
But then you can also get get an O2 spell power.
Get that stupid spell vamp totem that doesn't work at all on the Shaman
I don't think
deck.
Anybody ever wants to see that one.
No, that one's just heartbreaking.
Right, yeah. The other thing that the Shaman does is has the Overload, wherein it'll play lower cost cards that are more valuable than you would think they would be, but they come in a disadvantage in that there's Overload. Mm-hmm. So on the next turn, it'll subtract mana crystals rather than increasing them. Mm-hmm. So when you should have four, maybe you'll have two. So it just dramatically weakens you. So if you didn't get that push off of what you wanted that turn, you're really crippling yourself. Druid. The Druid, I think, probably has the most versatile hero power, and it just gets the 1/1.
Yeah, he gets one attack and he gets one armor, but the nice thing is, at the end of the turn, the one attack goes away, but you keep the armor. So the armor does continue to stack. So essentially, he's Garrosh the Warrior with damage.
Yeah.
Which is annoying.
Perfect combination.
He is really annoying.
Yeah. Also does the rapid mana growth. If, you know, Shaman is supposed to be the one that is diminishing his mana, then the Druid is the one that's really ramping it up super fast. Priest, I love the Priest so much. Priest is the best. And because of card draw, so much card draw coming out of that Priest.
The Priest is the one that, if I'm playing against a guy who really understands the Priest and knows what he's doing with them, is the most annoying thing to fight.
Yeah.
It might be him and the Paladin. But, I mean, dear God, those draw priest decks are super annoying.
Oh, yeah, with the North Shire. Acolyte is a neutral minion, but I think every deck I build now has two Acolytes in them, just because it's the... Acolyte is a 1/3, and every time it takes damage, it gets a card.
So that's cool.
You keep it alive, especially with the priest healing it up.
Oh, I may have one of those.
With the North Shire. So the North Shire is going to draw a card every time you heal. That thing's going to draw a card every time it takes damage. You can just sit there and cycle your deck. Like, I've done it so many times where, like, I didn't realize how powerful the card draw was. Mm. And then I'm burning cards off the top because I've already got 10 in my hand, you know? It's like, oh, it gets ugly. Paladin, like you said. I think Paladin's a good blend.
He's super versatile, and it's really annoying. His ability is he summons a 1/1, what's the
Squire?
Squire, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
Which is a good way to keep adding to your field. So in my Paladin deck, I have a lot of cards that get boost the more guys are out. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. So I try to flock them with just getting my low guys really powerful with a lot of them.
And he has a lot of cheap cards that come specific to Paladin that are all about just instantly increasing attack.
And also
like
those Divine Shields.
Oh, yes, Divine Shield. Yeah, I was going to talk about all of the different things you can do, like charge, taunt, enrage, divine shield, wind fury, freeze,
battle
silence,
cry.
Stealth, battle cries, death rattles.
Yep.
It's John. Do you like you
He's
look
just
like
sitting
you're
here
over
like
it.
Oh
no, please continue. Okay. All right. Warlock. Warlock is my baby. I have a level 40 warlock.
I hate warlocks. I cannot make a good warlock deck to save my life.
I think a lot of what I feel about the warlock is thinking you're about to die and then you win.
It's like that sounds about right.
It's like you play yourself as far to the brink of death as you can.
Yep.
Pulling in cards, and then before you know it, you got six cards in your hand and your opponent's top decking. And you've got two nasty taunts blocking your... And I love to bookend taunts on top of an ugly, huge board. Because it's just telling them, like, your opponent has to be like, gotta take rid of this thing, and this fucking cluster in the middle. Oh, it's great. It's great. I love the Warlock so much.
So what do you say is your favorite deck?
Yeah, my Warlock card draw.
Would you say it's your best deck?
Priest. Now. Yeah. And I feel like maybe if you check in a month later, I'll probably say the Priest is the greatest thing ever.
Uh-huh.
I think the Rogue could be tweaked a little bit into being a really the mean Rogue, card deck.
Yeah, the Rogue is
those
just...
Those sprints are great.
The Rogue has some nasty spells.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really annoying things. Like, kill a enemy minion with 2 health. Or kill any damaged minion. Mm-hmm. Or things like that. Which is really annoying. It's got a lot of annoying crap like that.
Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite things is that the Priest has... draw 2 cards from your opponent's deck. Which is great because a lot of the card draw depletes your own deck, but this one takes just straight up, it's a thought steal, takes 2 cards. So you're just adding cards to your deck. So your opponent now has 30 and you have 32 cards, including the ones you turned over to get new cards. That's and sometimes funny. You draw your opponents. Like, I instantly got a GG from a Rogue because I top decked one of her sprints. Or no, I do the thought steal into one of her sprints. So I get it and I was like, thank you. Good use of 10 mana. I really think the Priest is a lot of fun, although my heart stays with the Warlock right now. I'm going to stop prattling. I think I've said everything I need to say.
Yeah, this is really long. We could make a whole podcast about this one.
This game is so much fun. I'm really digging it. And having never played card games before, like, I'm instantly addicted. This just feeds all my RPG nerd love for it.
Should we keep the RPG nerd thing going then?
Yes.
I think we should. When should we take a break? Are we doing that this pod?
I might edit in some musical breaks. Why, do you want to get up for a minute? You want to get a drink?
No.
Okay, well,
because we're 31 minutes in, so I mean, I was just trying to be merciful to the listeners.
I'll edit in something.
All right.
And it'll probably be before we even mention this.
Yeah, actually. Probably. This right here is just going away.
This will be the lead-in.
That's exactly what's going to happen. I'm not editing anything out unless the dog has another barking fit.
Yeah, well, you know.
So...
Oh, sorry, that was me.
God damn it. I've been playing Grincia. Well, I've reached a stopping point, and I'll get to that in a second. Grincia is a game on the 3DS. It was originally a game for mobile phones, iPhone, Android. Nicholas published it on the 3DS. They published a very buggy version of it on the 3DS. It's a 16-bit style RPG, and... a lot of the bugs in it are game-breaking. So I have reached a town where if I try to enter the town with anyone else in my party other than my main character, the game freezes. And if I enter it with just my main character, I have about 100 steps before the game freezes. So I'm like a third of the way through the game at that point. And they say they're working on a patch, but I can't play any more of it until they release this patch because...
this is annoying.
It's become unplayable. So
sounds like maybe they let this one out of the box prematurely.
Maybe.
Maybe they could've...
or maybe they just didn't do any bug testing. They just finished formatting it for the 3DS and just released it. Like, yeah, fine, go. Just get it out there. And, you know, it's not... a particularly bad game, which is not a very interesting game either. Well, let's start at the beginning. It's about this treasure hunting family, a dad and his two kids. You play mainly as his son. He's the main character, and they're tasked with finding six ancient relics, kind of like in the old RPG tropes of finding all the crystals and stuff. They're on a mission from God, as it were, to find these things. So you're going around this world map, and you're completing quests in order to gather them up. So that's not the only thing that's really generic about that game, is to gather the six crystals. They also don't do anything really interesting with the world construction. It's pretty much, here's a town, you talk to a person in the town that tells you where to go next, you go there, you go into a cave, you fight a monster at the end, and then you find your relic that you're looking for. So it's a little bit uninspired with the way the world is built. Also, the characters, there's nothing really too special about them with the way they fight. There is a kind of white mage character girl. There's a black mage girl. There's kind of a thief character who's called a pirate in this game. But your three main characters that you start with, there's nothing that really differentiates themselves from each other. They all learn really similar skills, a little bit of black magic and a little bit of white magic and some physical stuff. But you have like the dad character, he's kind of supposed to be your tank, but your main character accomplishes that just fine as well. And the little sister, she's supposed to be like your back row brawler, so she's able to do the same amount of damage from the back row that you're doing from the front row with your other characters. But she's easily replaced by other characters who do melee damage, and you're also better off just taking a bunch of mages with you. So there's the battle system in general isn't really all that interesting either. It's just you got your two rows of your characters. It's a four character battle system. That's all you can have. Your enemies, I've seen as many as five, and they're also based on a row system as well, so they can have as many as three rows of enemies. And of course you're doing more damage to the ones in the front row unless you're hitting them with magic. And what happens is when you defeat the front row, the next row back will move forward and they become the front row of enemies. So you're able to just keep on doing heavy melee damage to whoever's in the front.
Do your characters behave differently if they're in the front or back row? Like, can you move around and they do different attacks?
Yeah, they don't do different attacks. Their attack power and their damage is raising and lowering depending when you have them positioned. So if they're in the back row, they're doing less physical damage, but they're also taking less damage. So the back row is, of course, where you're going to be putting your mages who are doing equal damage no matter where they're hitting in the rows. So there are a couple different skills that your characters do learn that affect where they're doing damage. So you can learn attacks that affect an entire row of enemies or an entire column. So you can start hitting enemies on multiple rows before they're moving up. But really, I've played through 4 or 5 hours of this game, and I'm mostly just spamming attack and doing just fine. Items are pretty plentiful, so I really haven't needed the white mage. I mean, I'm keeping her with me because I'm like, all right, maybe you might be like I kind of want to have a white mage. I want to have someone with me who can heal if necessary. But I pretty much heal anyone I need to with just potions, and I have about 70 in my stock.
So does damage carry from battle to battle? Like if you and startup, like if you come in with half health?
Yep, it carries over. But then, you know, when I'm out of battle, if I have just half health, I'll use a potion. And potions restore 80 HP from the beginning, which is pretty big. Most of my characters are just now like topping 120. So potions are still really useful. But that row system is the most interesting thing about the battles. But there's like the different options in battles, you know, just an attack, defend, you can use your skills, you can use an item, you can run. And then like the very last one is just auto, which turns just everyone onto straight attack. And whenever I have a random encounter, which are frequent, it's frustrating how frequent these battles are, I just immediately turn it on to auto. And 15 seconds later, battle's over, I'm moving on, healing if necessary. There's a day-night cycle, and that affects the areas you can go into and like the people that'll appear in towns. Like there's a particular town where a guy will tell you where to go next, but only appears at night, and there's a cave that you go into that floods during the day, so at night's the best time to explore if you're looking for all the treasures. You know, even if this game wasn't broken, it would still be hard to give it a full recommendation because it is so vanilla. The equipment system is, speaking of things that are pretty vanilla, also very simple. You can equip a weapon, you can equip armor, and then you can also equip two accessories. But that's the extent of it. And, you know, accessories will give you things like status immunities to things like poison and paralysis. They'll also boost your stats. Like, you have like an attack bangle, and it'll boost your attack plus three, your speed, so on and so forth. The only really interesting one is that you can actually equip these relics that you're collecting. And those will give you, like, special skills in battle. It gives you, like, that overdrive meter, like in Final Fantasy, where after you commit a certain number of actions, it'll fill up and you can use that special ability. Right now, the one I've used the most is just one that gives you a boost in attack, defense, and speed. And it's useless in random battles because by the time you're able to use it, the random battle is over, so it's only really useful when you're fighting bosses. So... like I said, four-party battle system, a third way through the game, and I have six party members already. I'm not quite sure how big this is going to get. It wouldn't be a bad game for $5, but it is 10. So it's tough to recommend. I already had $5 on my account, so I guess I kind of only paid $5 if you added them together. I don't really regret the purchase, but it's hard to say go out and buy this game because it's fine, but it's also broken. So if you are going to buy it, wait for a sale and wait for a patch because it's nearly unplayable when you get to a certain point. So anyone want to jump in next?
Anything?
Well, the only thing I've been playing is World of Warcraft and Skyrim.
Before we get to that, before we get to why you're quitting World of Warcraft.
I'm not quitting World of Warcraft.
Do not interrupt me. Before we get to why you're quitting World of Warcraft, I remember the other thing that I wanted to mention at the beginning of the show, and it's the most important news probably in the history of ever. Sailor Moon has been added to Hulu Plus.
Dear God, why are you sharing this?
Because I knew it would frustrate you.
Well, actually, since this is a great tangent for me.
Please, yes.
So, wait, talk about Sailor Moon is a great tangent for you.
Because we're talking about things we loved in the 90s.
It's okay if you love Sailor Moon in the 90s. It's all right.
Well, I think he is okay
TV with it. Shows that in the 90s that we enjoyed. I don't know if I could go back. And I'm probably going to watch it, though.
Sailor Moon?
Yeah.
It looks like they're adding four new episodes every Monday. Oh. Dez has already blasted through the first four.
Nice.
So Monday night, probably an hour and a half of our night is going to be her
Sailor Moon
playing
Sailor,
and me trying to play Grincia.
Okay, are you guys on Amazon Prime by any chance?
No.
No.
Well, there.
I had it for a little while, but then they wanted $80 for me. I was like,
might not be the thing that gets you back into getting a Prime account, but they have their own streaming service now, which is pretty solid. They have a lot of good stuff. One of the things that they have is a deal with Nickelodeon. So they have all of the old Nickelodeon series. I'm already on season 5 of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Nice.
I love it so much. They have Hey Dude.
Rocko's Modern Life?
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Rocko's Modern Life.
No, that's all right.
It was okay. It had its
moments. We've all been wrong at times.
Clarissa Explains It All. Salute
all
Your
that.
Shorts. All that. You actually have to pay.
Salute Your Shorts.
They have them, and I don't know why you have to pay for them, but you can get episodes of Legends of the Hidden Temple
for
$1.99 a piece.
What? Amazing!
I know, right?
Silver Snakes. I have that shirt in my dresser right now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I have it.
Well, Matt.
There's a website.
Yeah. I've been wanting a purple parrot.
You would.
Yeah, so that's just because you brought up shows in the 90s that were great.
So, Wes, why are you quitting?
I'm not quitting World of Warcraft. I'm just saying. I've been
why are you
playing...
such a charlatan?
I hate you both. I really do.
So you're
I'm just
you're
thinking about taking a break. Because that's the thing about, wow, you pay monthly. I burned so many hours into this. Mm-hmm. I just need to take a little break.
Do you feel like you're not getting your money's worth? Like
No, I'm getting my money's worth. 3 months, I have three level 90s and a level 40, a level 55. I'm getting my money's worth.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So,
have you ever considered like maybe Final Fantasy 14? You got to jump into a different MMO?
I'm sick of MMOs that you got to pay for. That's the
I don't know if you have to pay for Final Fantasy 14. That's how much much attention I've paid to it.
I heard it's really good though.
So have I.
Yeah. It's interesting because I heard World of Warcraft, you make a character and you pick a class and you go through the quest and you level up your dude. In Final Fantasy, you pick your dude and you pick the class, but you can change class whenever you want and level up multiple classes. So instead of having 10 different dudes of different classes, you can have one dude do
with
like
different
all
jobs,
the classes.
Yeah.
You can have one guy do all the jobs and everything like
all
that.
All the things.
All the things. So I mean, it seems interesting, but I just don't like paying every month to play a game.
Right. Like
it's kind of ridiculous, but
I'm opposed to that in principle as well.
But it's worth it with WoW if you
I'd
really
rather pay $10 for a broken game than $15 a month for a game that I love.
But, you know, it's worth it with WoW. You really get your money's worth out of that one. And since the last time we played, I actually finally got a level 90, which now I'm doing raids and stuff in it, which is like a raid is like a dungeon without the boring stuff in the middle. It's like one boss, tiny trash area where it's just trash mobs, and then another boss. And each of these bosses have their own little strategies you need to do with them and everything like that. And the final boss of the last raid in the newest expansion is Garrosh.
Nice.
And he's an annoying motherfucker because you got your ranged guys and you have your melee guys, and you're just pretty much your melee guys are on top of him and your ranged guys are sitting in the back. And he'll throw an axe in one spot and you'll have to move away from the axe, kill the axe, and then you have to turn back on Garrosh. He has like, I forget how many phases, but he has a tons of different phases to it.
Is it the Fiery War Axe?
That's one of the cards. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, at one part, there's these giant fireballs coming, and, like, a shaman has to use Thunderbolt and launch the mobs that spawn around Garrosh into the fireballs to wipe them out quicker. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just tons of different strategies you have to do in all these little bosses along the way. And when you hit level 90, you're just redoing these raids over and over again to keep getting higher and higher level items to buff your dude. Mm-hmm. And so it gets ridiculous. And then there's the raids, and then you can play the raids on heroic mode, where it's the same raid, but the raid has it's more difficult, and even some bosses introduce new mechanics to it. So, like, Garrosh gets an entire other phase in heroic mode, and it just gets ridiculous. But it's a lot of fun with raids. So, the
Jonas is a giant
pain in the ass until you hit to 90.
I'll admit, I did a lot of zoning out right there.
Yeah,
I was thinking to myself, I'd probably play Final Fantasy XIV if I could play as a Tonberry. And if I can, do not tell me. I don't want to pay for this game. I don't want to know.
That would be amazing.
So, you want to bring up any other games before we move into... I got one more. Anyone else got any more?
I want to break down the first three seasons of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Okay. Please. Go ahead.
Episode one is an episode where there's an evil clown.
I just watched the one that's actually... I didn't just watch it. I rewatched it. But there's a great episode that M. Night Shyamalan admitted was his inspiration for The Sixth Sense, wherein the basic punchline of the episode is that the character's been dead the whole time and you don't realize it. But it's such a fantastic episode.
You're not going to watch it. Fuck you.
I mean, come on. The show's been around since the 90s.
There's a statute of limitations on this.
And there's some genuinely good scares. Like some, granted, it's still kids and stuff, but they get some really good scares. Like if you want a kind of poltergeisty throwback, like jump scares and shit like that, they do a pretty good
House
job.
The TV show House ruined the big twist in Usual Suspects, and I haven't seen that.
Have you not seen that?
I don't know.
Yeah, you lived with me for like 3 years, and I have that DVD.
I don't know how I haven't watched
it. You're
going
to watch all of Steven.
I never watched
this.
I was watching House, and they gave it the punchline. I was like, I haven't seen that movie. This show just ruined, just spoiled that movie for me.
So they told you that Kevin Spacey's Kaiser Soze?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what I said.
Now I just spoiled it for everyone else.
Yeah.
That's great.
Suck it. Intentionally.
Suck it,
listeners. This is a gaming podcast, though. It's not sacrilegious.
It's true.
On our filming podcast, this would be really bad news.
Even then, I mean, it's been out for a long time. Mm-hmm. Get on it. So the last game I want to talk about is Stick It to the Man, which is a Wii U eShop game. And, you know, in contrast to other games that I've talked about, this one's actually worth the price of $10, I think. And this one
is... Go out on a limb there.
I know, right?
Whoa!
In my opinion, the other games have not been worth the price so far. I think that this one is worth the price. This one is a 2D adventure platformer game. It sometimes thinks it's a little bit funnier than it is, but it's at least mildly amusing in its writing. It's got a really cool art style to it. It's like a 2D kind of Paper Mario art style where everything's constructed out of paper or like cardboard or something. It's pretty cool that on some of the objects in the game, you can kind of see the corrugation on the side of certain like buildings and things in the foreground. It's got a really like Cartoon Network-y kind of animation style to it where things are exaggerated and kind of intentionally made to look shitty. It's not supposed to look like real. It reminds me a little bit of like Ed, Edd n Eddy, that kind of animation style. Doesn't really add anything to the game. It just kind of makes things look funny. It's pretty cool. As far as the paper mechanics, I guess is like how to describe it. You don't really do much with that. Like of course, Paper Mario does more because it's kind of based around like Mario's skinny and he can get through certain things and fold himself into different shapes. You don't really do that in this game, but you do peel away certain parts of buildings as if they were like sheets of paper or stickers, and it reveals other things, people to talk to, objects to collect, that kind of thing. When you do it, it's not entirely different from like Kirby's Epic Yarn, how you're peeling away bits of the level like that. So the main premise of the game is that you're this average dude and you are hit in the head by a piece of debris that's fallen from a plane, and you wake up and your head is kind of being inhabited by this alien creature who lives in your consciousness but kind of manifests itself in reality by having like this big string of spaghetti, pink spaghetti, out of your head with an arm at the end of it. And people, like, there's a villain called The Man, which is a joke that just gets played to death, that is after you to get this thing from you. And it takes you across multiple chapters throughout the game. The game is divided into chapters, and trying to run away from enemies, being trapped in an insane asylum because you tell a psychiatrist that they have this thing like climbing out of his head and no one else can see it but you. So the basic gameplay is pretty similar to The Cave. Wes, you'll remember that one.
Nice.
It's basically a puzzle game where you're just trying to bring objects you find to appropriate people or appropriate places and stick them there like they're stickers. It does have some shortcuts that are nice that The Cave didn't have. There are ways that you can warp from one point of level to the other, so it's easier to backtrack. Some of the bigger areas in The Cave were a bit tough to backtrack and look where you've been to see if there's something you've missed.
Like the Time Traveler's one, that was really annoying.
Exactly, yeah, the Time Traveler's one was a pain in the butt. And also, this game, The Cave has multiple characters, so you can have multiple people carrying objects, but, of course you have a max of three things that you can carry around. This one, you have an inventory system.
Nice.
So you're able to carry around stuff that you need to give to other people. And a lot of times in this game, when you're carrying around these keys to your puzzles, it's a good strategy is to just go throughout the entire level, find everything you can, and once you get a good inventory, everything will start falling into place. Like, it steamrolls, and you build a lot of momentum, and the puzzles aren't as hard as they are in The Cave, but some of them are still pretty clever, and it's a fun game to play through. The only one that really got stumped, that I really got stumped on, was in Chapter 7, and there's 10 chapters. That was really the only time that there was a head-scratcher. I wasn't quite sure what to do next. There are a decent variety of levels. It's not all, like, moving throughout this one area, talking to people, and giving them stuff that they need. There are some where you have to evade enemies. There are some really light platforming elements to it. You only run at one speed, but there's also platforms to jump onto. And, like, there are these thumbtacks that are holding up objects or buildings, as if they're made of cardboard or paper. And you can swing onto those to just get access to a new area or to do, like, a quick evasion away from an enemy. It's got a good variety to the gameplay. Some of the chapters are pretty brisk, like Chapter 8. I remember just... It was just basically one run from one side of the level to the other without getting caught by an enemy. And there were a couple of times where you had to tap jump to jump onto a different platform or, swing onto a thumbtack. But overall, it was a pretty simple chapter. And the game in general isn't really very long. I clocked about 5 hours before I beat it. And at least 30 minutes of that was me pausing the game and going and chasing after the baby who was eating something she probably shouldn't be eating. So it's a really brisk experience, but I had a lot of fun with it, and I think that $10 is a pretty decent price for it. There are some control issues that I experienced. So basically, all you're using in this game is that there's a jump button, of course. You're using the analog stick on the left to control your movement. You're controlling the analog stick on your right to kind of control what your hand is targeting, like things that you're going to be grabbing. And there's and you're control they're using the right trigger in order to execute the grab. There's also a mind reading element to the game where if you press the L trigger, you go into mind reading mode, then you move your cursor with the right stick to target whose mind you want to read, and you press the right trigger to execute it. So this, like, it's like you're grabbing their mind, except you're pressing an extra button in order to initiate that mode. Okay. There's also another way to do it, which uses motion control, where you have to tilt the gamepad toward the TV. And
is that a pain in the ass?
It is a pain in the ass because sometimes it does it unintentionally. Because you don't play with the gamepad like up and facing you. This is not a natural position to hold it in. So normally you're just kind of holding it in your lap. But then if you like move it all in order to just like reposition yourself, or if you're reaching for a drink or something, it'll enter that mind reading mode. And then you kind of have to fumble with the control, like, all right, stop trying to read someone's mind. And you're like tilting it in different directions, just trying to get it to stop. I haven't found a way to turn off those motion controls, but they're stupid. They're stupid and they should go away. I think that this type of game is ideal for a Wii Remote and Nunchuck setup, and I haven't really checked to see if that's possible. I've beaten the game and I probably won't go back to it, so I'll probably never know. If you know, send me a message on Miiverse. It's like, yes, you can play with the Wii Remote
and
Nunchuck.
You'll be like, huh.
And I'll be like, okay. Cool.
Moving on with life.
But because like you have those two triggers on the Wii Remote and Nunchuck easily accessible, and you'd be able to like use the pointer controls to actually point at things you want to grab or minds you want to read, I think it would make a lot more sense than, you know, tilting a controller. Mm. Anyway, that's just me. But overall, a really fun little game. Pretty clever puzzles. Not so clever writing, but decent. Not going to be any worse than anything you'd watch on like Cartoon Network. Mm. It's on the same level as Ed, Ed and Eddy. Yeah.
Yeah, except Ed and Eddy was like awesome.
Ed and Eddy was silly.
Ed and Eddy was awesome.
It was fun.
Well, it's okay. You're a communist. It's okay.
I describe myself as a socialist.
He's really an American sometimes.
Jackass.
So, any other games you want to throw out? Before we bring this show to a close,
there's one game I want to talk about. The game of baseball. How are the Red Sox doing?
Not.
We haven't talked about Red Sox in a long time, so yeah, might as well do it now.
Not great. Yeah. I think we've lost 7 in a row. Not great. It's been frustrating because it's been one of those seasons where nothing has ever really come together at the same time. So there are times where we pitch really well, but not hitting very well. There are times where we hit quite well, but our pitchers aren't getting it done. And there are times where, you know, we're hitting and pitching well, but the defense isn't there, committing a lot of errors. And there's no like cohesive element to the team right now. And I don't see it getting better.
No.
Basketball.
Let's think about basketball.
Sure.
We don't have to.
We're still in May. I still kind of care about the sport. Like, yeah. Basketball has, like, from April 1st to May 30th. That's as much interest as I can give them.
Yeah.
But the Spurs are, you know, Spurs are still the Spurs.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
The game last night was brutal.
It was really what happened? Like, I didn't pay attention last night.
Oh, I mean, they won by, like, 30-plus points. So, franchise record for
the Spurs.
Well, it's they're playing the Thunder right now.
Is the Thunder
tied the most they've ever lost by in a playoff game.
Is that series at 2-1 now, or is it 1-1?
2-1.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I did hear about that game, though. Yeah, Ibaka got injured, and they just pounded him inside.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you think that series is over?
I don't know. I wasn't prepared to talk about basketball. I was really hoping you would have more... You would have less depressing baseball stuff to talk about.
No, I guess...
I thought you were going to say there was going to be some hope.
How's the Yankees doing?
No, not not all that great. Like the one positive, I guess, that we can take out of this, the Red Sox situation right now, is that they're not out of it. They're still only like 4 games back of first place, but they're in 4th. Yeah. So everything is kind of clustered together, and there's a chance that they could get it together and, you know, make
what
a run.
What changed from last season, though?
The pitching performance. There are a couple. Actually, an interesting development that happened in the past couple days is their shortstop last year, Stephen Drew. He was a free agent when they picked him up. They signed him to a 1-year deal, and if we're going to get a little bit inside baseball here, they offered him, they gave him a qualifying offer. And a qualifying offer at the end of 2013, after they won the World Series, they gave him a qualifying offer, which is basically a one-year offer for the league average salary, which at the time was about $14 million. He turned it down thinking that he could get a better deal, which, you know, he probably should have been able to, but there are intricacies to the way the draft works. If a team had made him an offer, since the Red Sox made him a qualifying offer, they'd have to sacrifice a draft pick. Mm-hmm. And the Red Sox picked up a draft pick because they gave him a qualifying offer and he didn't accept it. He was looking for a multi-year deal. In 2013, he was coming off an injury, so he kind of signed a one-year deal in order to try to build a bit of a reputation so he can get a multi-year deal somewhere. Just in the past couple days, he was still a free agent because nobody signed him. They just signed him to a one-year deal for, I think, like $9 million, if I'm not mistaken. So they got him at a bit of a discount, and their third baseman, Will Middlebrooks, sucks. Which is sad because I like the guy. He hits for power, but can't seem to hit for average. He's like below 200. He's on the DL right now with a broken finger. It should probably stay broken.
Oh no!
Just sad to say. But I don't know. The pitching hasn't been there. Buchholz.
Do you think they need him just to remember last year?
There is something about, like, Clay Buchholz has a twin brother, I think, and. This imposter shows his ugly face from time to time. Back in 2011, or 2012, he was terrible for the first half of the year. And the second half of the year, he kind of got it together. I guess, like, he decided to, like, let his twin brother take a break for the rest of the season, and the good one came back. I don't know what good, but right now the imposter has been showing his face most of the season and needs to go away.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, John Lester's been great.
Does the imposter have a big twirly mustache?
I wish he would. Now I can tell the difference. John Lackey's been okay, had a rough start. Jake Peavy's been okay. He had a rough start last time, too. Felix DuBrant has not been very good, inconsistent. It's just they can't seem to get a good team, like an entirely good team on the field at any given time. Somebody always sucks.
Oh, shit. I was going to say. The MLB Insider, like, you know, they do their game of the day.
Yeah.
You can just stream online. Right now it's discounted, so the entire league pass is $49.
Yeah, you sent me a text about that. I wish I had, like, something reliable to stream it on. I don't want to sit at my computer. I'm doing a little bit more research on, like, Blu-ray players that have streaming options. So
buy a Roku.
Yeah, that's what
I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about Amazon Fire, though, between the two of them.
Well, Roku, I sell a Roku One in my store right now for $50.
All right.
My three cost, I think, $90 when I
had it. Alright, Amazon, make me a counteroffer.
And, you know, Gary Busey does sell that really well.
Well, see, the thing about, does Roku do Amazon Prime?
Yeah, that's how I watch it.
Okay.
Yeah, man, that's like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, like all those apps.
Who has seen the Gary Busey commercial for Amazon?
Yeah, I've seen it.
I don't think I have.
It plays on Hulu.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so good. I love it.
You can't still really as manic as I'm used to.
It's like the one thing I like Gary Busey in is that Amazon commercial. It's like the one thing.
He's like watching a train wreck. Yeah. He's like watching a train wreck over 40 years. Anyway, should we bring this show to a close on this depressing note about the Red Sox?
That's fine.
The defending world champion Red Sox.
That's the thing to remember.
Yep. Anyway. So, next week is going to be the official show. We got some Mario Kart to talk about.
Yeah, buddy.
Our official show might bleed over into April. Or, not April, because that would be the past.
Oh, my God.
That'd be some podcast trickery right there. Into June, because Mario Kart comes out, like, on Friday the 30th.
We should just wait a second. And...
Yeah, there might be scheduling issues.
All right.
So, anyway, that show will be up someday.
Yeah, you know.
But until next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.